From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. The Juneau Assembly turned down a $2 million donation from the Norwegian Cruise Line Company during its regular meeting last night. As KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, some Assembly members were concerned about what the public would think about the city taking the money.
In May, Norwegian announced it would donate a total of $10 million to Alaska port communities. The funds were intended to support small businesses and those most impacted by the lack of cruise passengers last year. The company has purchased an empty waterfront lot downtown where it wants to build a dock. Carol Treem is one of six Assembly members who voted against taking the donation. She says the proposed dock factored heavily in her decision.
The whole process from start to finish requires decision-making from the Assembly, and I just think that to accept money from NCL, even though it's totally separate from the decisions we'd be making about this development project, just is not a good look for us.
Treem says even though she has faith in everyone involved, just the appearance of impropriety is enough to lose the public's trust. During the meeting, Assemblymember Wade Bryson disagreed with that argument.
The opposition to the dock is still going to be there. The pro-tourism groups are still going to be there. Taking that $2 million changes not one number on either side of that equation.
Bryson added that the path for Norwegian getting its dock is already in city code and charted out.
Yes, I would agree that we have to make a couple of decisions along the way, but they're not going to be able to come up with like some strategy or technique that's going to help them circumvent the Juneau process. It would be foolish and fiscally irresponsible to reject this money that is going to go at our decision to helping our community.
Ultimately, the motion failed by a 6-3 vote, and the Assembly asked City Manager Rory Watt to go back to Norwegian, suggesting the company donate directly to an organization like the Juneau Community Foundation instead of the city itself. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
The legislative special session is scheduled to end on Friday, and lawmakers have not passed a budget. It's been 2 days since budget negotiators agreed to a compromise, but neither chamber has held a regular floor session since then. There is still disagreement over the size of the permanent fund dividend and how to pay for it. The compromise budget sets the permanent fund dividend at $1,100, but it would be reduced to $525 if three-quarters of either chamber fails to approve a separate motion after the budget vote. Legislators met in private, seeking agreement on the next steps. The Senate held a three-minute technical session today. An Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Wilikowski objected to that short floor session, noting it had been scheduled as a regular floor session.
We have important business to do. The session ends in a couple days. We need to vote on this conference committee report, Mr. President.
The Senate narrowly voted to adjourn today's session. State workers are scheduled to receive layoff notices on Thursday if the budget isn't approved. As Alaska lawmakers decide what to do about the budget, one group that's been keeping an eye on the outcome are the agencies that rate the state's ability to pay off its debts. As the budget situation worsened in recent years, the agencies downgraded the state's credit 10 times. But as Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports, the rating agencies see improvement in Alaska's outlook.
The past year has seen oil prices stabilize, and investment growth has added to the Alaska Permanent Fund. Edward Hampton says both are good news for the state budget. He's analyzed Alaska's finances since Sarah Palin was the governor, and he worked on a recent Moody's Investor Service report that revised the outlook for Alaska's credit rating from negative to stable.
You know, Alaska is a state that is adjusting to a new approach to the oil industry, I think. And a big part of that is being able to rely on the permanent fund's earnings in a systematic way.
It isn't just the oil and investment markets that have helped. Hampton says the 3 years of the state sticking to a plan to draw from permanent fund earnings are also a reason for the improved outlook.
For at least the time being, we are accepting that the state is adhering to its structured draw approach and is not going to try to deviate from that in a dramatic way that would deplete the permanent fund earnings reserve account. Obviously, there is risk if the state goes in the direction of paying higher dividends.
This week, legislators are debating a budget that would pay an $1,100 dividend, less than half the amount proposed by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Despite the improved outlook, Moody's currently gives only two states worse credit ratings than Alaska, Illinois and New Jersey. S&P Global Ratings also changed Alaska's credit outlook from negative to stable this spring. Like Moody's, S&P analysts cite improvements in oil prices and permanent fund earnings. Devin Mitchell says there are practical benefits for the state and its residents when the ratings agencies see an improved outlook. As the debt manager for the state, he tries to protect the state's credit rating. Mitchell says the revised outlooks allowed Alaska municipalities to refinance loans at a lower rate, and the city of Sandpoint and the Southeast Alaska Power Agency took out new loans at less expense through the municipal bond bank.
And so if that was only, you know, a tenth of a percent, it still makes a big difference when you're talking about a couple $100 million of bonds being issued.
Mitchell notes the ratings agencies continue to point out risks related to uncertainty over how much will be drawn from permanent fund earnings. But Mitchell says that while there are divisions over the budget, lawmakers have been less dire in their predictions than they were when the agencies repeatedly downgraded Alaska's credit rating. And he says that's helped improve the credit outlook.
So I think that's made a big difference. It's just the tone of the discussion in the state of Alaska, even though some of the same issues remain.
Legislative budget negotiators are hoping to pass the budget before Thursday, when state workers are scheduled to receive layoff notices. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Two kayakers paddled 6 miles to safety across Ski Lock Lake in Cooper Landing after they were mauled by a bear on Saturday morning. Sabine Pooks in Kenai has the story.
Jamie Nelson of Kenai was at the upper Ski Lock Lake campground when the kayakers pulled up around 2 a.m.
6 miles for 2 hours after being mauled by bears. That's the part of the story I just cannot wrap my head around. They are amazing people.
Officials aren't releasing the names of the kayakers, but Nelson says last he heard, they were both in stable condition. The kayakers were tent camping on the shores of Ski Lock Lake Friday night, where the lake meets Hidden Creek. They'd kayaked there earlier that day from the car-accessible Upper Ski Lock campground. Close to midnight, a bear charged them in their tent while they were sleeping. They had bear spray, but the bear charged too quickly for them to use it. Both were injured, the male victim more severely than the female. Nelson says he's unsure how the victims got away from the bear, but when they did, they were able to treat the lacerations to their arms and legs.
And luckily, they were so prepared and had a nice first aid kit with them that they had a product called Quick Clot, which apparently slows bleeding.
Victim's campsite was accessible via Hidden Creek Trail, but even if they knew about that entry point, the male victim's injuries were so bad he couldn't walk. Instead, they paddled for nearly 2 hours back to the upper Ski Lock Lake campground. Ski Lock Lake is large and can get pretty windy and wavy.
Had the winds picked up that night and the water been choppy, I just don't know if they could have made the voyage, but it was glassy calm.
Nelson and his family had a campsite along the shore and heard the kayakers scream for help as they pulled in. So did several other campers and the campsite host. They called an ambulance and helped the female victim get something from her car while they waited. The male victim stayed in the kayak on the beach. He was cold and didn't think he could support himself with his leg.
I think adrenaline was still playing a pretty big role because they, for everything they had been through, they were very calm. They were very matter-of-fact and realistic about what happened and what needed to happen from that point forward.
The ambulance arrived less than a half hour after Nelson made the call. A few minutes later, a medevac showed up to take the male victim away. Nelson met one of the victim's friends the next day when he came by with wildlife troopers.
I'll never forget what he told to me when he looked me in the eyes and thanked me. He said, you know, we have living friends.
Nelson's kids slept through the whole thing, but he says it was a really moving thing to see.
It's just a very life-affirming story that when people are in danger, Alaskans come together and rally around people in need of help. And even though there may be concerns for their own safety, they will come running to help neighbors in need.
Meanwhile, officials from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game have sent DNA samples from the scene up to Anchorage to learn more about the bear involved in the attack. Though they're not sure what kind of bear it was, Nelson says the victims thought it was a brown bear. Officials say the bear was likely unprovoked. Fish and Game Regional Management Coordinator Jeff Selinger says it's important to remember attacks like these are rare. But he says it's also important to be prepared in bear country, as these victims were. The refuge closed Hidden Creek Trail after the attack to give investigators some space. The trail reopened Sunday. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.